Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Today's episode is, there are a lot of people who are going to get some great insights out of this episode. I have two guests today. They are both 30 plus year veterans of healthcare executive search. So allow me to introduce Neil Marshall, who's the chairman, and Kurt Mosley, who's the association practice leader of Health Search Partners based in Dallas. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me on I Don't Care.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. Really looking forward to it.
It's good to be with you, Kevin.
I know many of our healthcare colleagues know you guys, but take a few minutes just to, Neil, if you'll say a few words about yourself, and then Kurt, if you don't mind following.
Sure. And again, thanks. Neil Marshall, I'm chair and one of the co-founders of Health Search Partners, have been involved in hospital and health system executive search for almost 30 years, probably been involved in about 600 senior level placements, interviewed about 10,000 hospital executives over the years. And then also along with Kurt, am the kind of the driving force behind our 90-day series, which is one of the things that we're going to talk about today. So again, thanks for having us.
Very similar to Neil, I've been in the business for about 30 years prior to joining Health Search Partners and heading up the association practice division. I worked for AMN Healthcare, and during that time, I think I spoke to over 5,000 industry leaders nationwide on articles ranging from doctor shortage, health and poverty. I'm proud to be a part of the Executive Speakers Bureau and proud to be part of this podcast series. So again, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. Neil, if you don't mind, tell my folks a little bit about Health Search Partners, kind of the inception, and you said you're one of the co-founders. Who else is involved?
Sure. So when we started Health Search Partners, just in the search business, just like in the hospital business, it was consolidation, and three firms came together, Sutherland Partners, CES Partners, and Face Search Partners. We all came together. We all knew each other from back working with Whitkiefer, and decided to come together to form Health Search Partners with a real focus on we wanted to be big enough to be relevant, but still be small enough that we didn't have some of the off-limits issues that some of the big search firms had.
Well, you mentioned your 90-day series, and I got to be honest, I've been looking at a number of those on your website, and they're just great nuggets of leadership and of hospital and health system operations. Why did you launch the series?
So, I tell you the way it came about, the story. Kurt and I were interviewing a guy by the name of Richard Parks, CEO of Covenant in Lubbock, on something else. And so we were talking to him, and he said, "Well, Neil," he said, "when I start a new job, Mama stays home to sell the house and get everything to move, and then I move into the hospital." And I said, "I know, Richard, everybody works really hard the first 90 days. And he said, no, Neil, I move into the hospital." And I'm like, whoa, tell me more, Richard. I want to know about this. This is really interesting. And so he told the story. He told the story of the first night at Covenant, wakes up the next morning, and like a lot of us older folks, he was spending the night with the residents in the resident dorm, and he says, "Hey, guys, how'd you sleep?" And they said, "We slept like it was horrible. These mattresses are horrible." And he said, "I can fix that." Calls his VP of facilities and says, "Get five trucks. We're going to Costco and we're buying all new mattresses today." And he said the goodwill that he created in his first day, and just he said that on his last day, people were still talking about him living in the hospital. And from there, Kurt and I, actually it was Kurt that drove it. He said, This is interesting. And I said, we need to reach out to other of our hospital CEO contacts and see who else has done something that's really innovative, interesting. And that's how the series started. And we've interviewed I don't know, 30 people so far about it.
Yeah, that's great. So Kurt, tell me about a couple of your favorite ones.
Well, you mentioned earlier you knew Hayden Sensor, and I liked his approach. I mean, what he did is he established this precedent of rounding on Christmas Day with his family, and personally thanking the staff for working that day and working in the industry. They handed out candy canes. It was a great presence. And then there was a couple times due to a family issue, they couldn't make it. It was really missed. So you could tell that everybody just loved it. And it just, the gesture reinforces culture of appreciation, empathy. I know how hard you work, and visibility from leadership. I think this whole leadership takeaway we're seeing right now with these 90 days is that Wayne led with humility, visibility, and most importantly, responsiveness. You know, he was there. They just didn't do the Christmas rounding. He also conducted surprise visits to all the departments. Real-time issues, you know, said, gosh, I didn't know it was broken. And it, he found like things that were obviously machinery that was broken. He fixed it. He had these conversational lunch meetings with doctors and his staff, and then had a whole EMR redesign that reduced the length of stay, which I think was, these are all great stories, but if they don't, you know, the proof's not in the pudding, you just don't have it there. And he scrubbed in and observed surgical workflow, improved that in the hospital. But most importantly, he built rapport with the teams and identified these inefficiencies. And he said, you know, I'm here with you. You know, a lot of it was surgical supply chain that he helped fix, things that for years have been going wrong at the hospital. So he said, I'm here and I care, and I'm here when you're here. So,
you know, I know whenever I kind of do some of the same things, I never moved into the hospital. No, I take that back. I actually lived in one of my hospitals for about 3 months or about 3 weeks while our house was being built.
Sure.
And finished up. So my family and I got to experience living in a patient room, and believe me, my girls were a little small at that time, and so it was certainly a challenge, but I got a lot out of it. So in my first, you know, typically my first 90 days in a leadership role in a hospital, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to develop trust. You know, whenever I came to my current location, I had gotten a little heads up from some of my folks that we've got a particularly difficult physician that is very, you know, distrustful at times of administration. So I said, okay. So I said, give me a cell number. So I gave him a call, introduced myself, and I said, hey, I'm new here. I'd just like to spend some time with you, meet you, get to know you a little bit better. And he said, yeah, I'd be glad to. Came down to my office. He said, you know, no one has ever done that. He'd practiced at this hospital for 25 years. He said, nobody had ever done that. And he and I, until he retired about a year ago, we had the best relationship. And he helped me really drive that service line. And so, yeah, I really am very intentional about that. Okay, so you talked about Wayne's Christmas visits. We do that as well. I admit I've dressed as Santa a few times here and walked the halls and handed out candy canes. But what we also instituted, I think I mentioned beforehand, I spent some time in Louisiana and was active in a Mardi Gras crew, and so I have all of the garb because I was a king. And so we started Mardi Gras parades through the hallways. And I mean, we have music, we have beads, we have candy, and people have grown to love that. And they'll start asking in early January, hey, when's the parade? And so, you know, things like that. So I really enjoyed seeing some of these other insights from what other people do. Kurt, I did notice one, you had an article on healthcare in 2025. And I always like to talk about trends. Talk to my audience a little bit about, you know, kind of your thoughts in and around that.
When I spoke across the country, I always used Yogi Berra's famous quote, and I know you're a baseball fan, but he said, you know, making predictions is really, really tough, especially about the future.
Yeah.
The predictions in 2025 were the article I put together, and thanks for bringing it up. It was a tough one because it's 2024 showed us it was really unpredictable. I mean, obviously with the election, and I don't want to get into that because, you know, somebody asked me the other day, are you on the left or on the right? And I said, I'm on the patient side. I'm not on either side. So, and we all are, sadly. And we're going to be, if we're not currently patients, we will be. But executive turnover was going to accelerate. That's another thing that drove the 90-day plan. The 2023 ACHE numbers indicated a 42% increase. We don't have the 2024 numbers, but I assume 2024 and 2025 is going to be, there's going to be a lot of turnover, because I think a lot of CEOs are saying, I stuck it through COVID. I did what I was supposed to do, and I'm moving on. And I also think that poverty is going to rear its ugly head again. And I spoke on that for years and still do. But the problem that we have in America now, and you hear everybody talking about cutting Medicaid and adjusting Medicare, but I always like to say this, Kevin, 5% of our patient population accounts for half the healthcare spending. Let me say that again, 5% of the $4.6 trillion we spend is only is 50% of that, it's only 5% of our patient population. How do we fix that? You know, how do we get healthcare to them earlier so that these hospitals aren't jammed up as you deal with having to take on Entala without, you know, compensation? And then just the whole cost of turnover, with more and more turnover, it's not just the direct costs, it disrupts the culture, slows progress, and sometimes with a lot of movement in a hospital, it weakens the public trust. So that was really my prediction. And then really with the whole issue with United Healthcare, sadly, and the whole situation, but we really have to look outside of healthcare and say, how do we fix this? Because nobody would have designed it, what we have right now. You know it, and I know it. It's just, it's sort of a hodgepodge, but we have to look deep down inside and maybe look outside of the industry for people to help.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you've touched on something that we saw a huge impact earlier this year. So obviously, February is Heart Month. And my listeners and viewers have heard a little bit of this story. But we decided to cut the cost of our CT calcium scoring scans. We cut it down to $39. Typically, as you know, it's anywhere from $150 to $300. But we said, you know what, we want to do this for our community, $39 scan. We typically did about $100 or so a month. Well, so we did that. In February, we did over 1,000. And we have continued that. You know, I think March was in the 700 range. In the last 3 months, we've still maintained about 500 of those a month.
Hey, Kevin, quick question. How many lives you saved because of that?
Let me get to that.
Okay, sorry.
No. Because, you know, I'm supporting my imaging department, right? So I signed up. I signed up early in the month. So I go in there, and I'd had a couple of calcium scores before. They weren't great, but I was on, you know, medication and had no symptoms at all. Felt fine. I go in there, and as my former primary care in the Dallas-Fort Worth market said, whenever I told him, he goes, I've never heard a number that high. So I ended up going into the cath lab 10 days later and had 4 stents. So, and I had no idea. My cardiologist, who's a good friend of mine, said, you don't know how close you are. And so that was my story. But we have already done, I think last count, 6 open heart surgeries, over 20 in the cath lab. But we also found residual lung cancers, breast cancer, triple A's. I mean, and still to the, even this weekend, yesterday at church, I had somebody come up to me, hey, can we still get that calcium score? And you know what we did after that first month? We decided we're going to keep it at a low price because the community needs it. It really brought preventative care to light in our community. And I'll admit, we got a lot of residual revenue off of that. But you know, really being intentional about promoting preventative care, you know, we're and our next iteration is lung nodule clinics. We're really starting to push that, low dose CT scans, and so I you know, seeing the benefit of that just kind of ties into what Kurt was talking about. You know, those trends. We've got to get preventative opportunities out to our communities. So
go ahead. It's sadly, Kevin, that what you brought up of that $4.6 trillion we discussed, 2% of that's preventative medicine.
Yeah.
You know, and it's absolutely, And we pay for it down the road. My neighbor is a cardiologist, and he went to the homeless area here in Dallas and had a dentist come and clean teeth. And it was the whole issue. I used to speak about mental health equals physiological health. They all, I think 20 or 80% had high blood pressure. He cleaned their teeth and they all came back to normal. So again, we just have to get help to people needing it now and needing it earlier in life so we don't pay for it down the road.
Kurt brought up something. He brought up the 2023 ACHE numbers of CEO turnover, really C-suite turnover. Let me ask you a question because, you know, I've had obviously a number of colleagues who have been affected by downsizing, by, you know, severance or whatever. I have been on a couple of occasions in my career. Things happen. How does a senior executive, number one, you know, position themselves to their colleagues, but also certainly to recruiters and other folks that can help them for the next stage of their career? Because, you know, I'll be honest, early in my career, you know, it happened to me. I'll own some of it. Some of it was out of my control. Everybody says that. But, you know, it's tough. It's tough to perceive yourself as a failure for that point of time. You know, I said, you know, I'm going through the grieving process, and you kind of work your way through, and then you get on the other side and you're in good shape. But from a recruitment standpoint, you know, give my folks some insight and some tips on that.
So the first thing I would say, Kevin, is dig your well before you're thirsty. Okay. The corollary to that is, you know, everybody gives 110% to their job, right? And I say, don't do it. Give 90% to your job and 10% you give to you. And by what I mean by that is you take 10% of your time and your energy and your focus, and you continue to build your network and your relationships. I hate the word network because but build your relationships and keep your relationships strong. I had a conversation with somebody and he kind of griped about a search guy calling. And I said, look, I said, it's not when we call that you need to be afraid. It's when we stop calling. And we're not going to stop if we have a relationship with you. No matter. So you've got to continue to build your relationships. Don't get so focused on your desk and what's going on in your hospital that you don't keep the relationships intact and focused and building.
Well, and that's a great thing. It took me a few years early in my career to figure out, you know, the benefit of networking and keeping those relationships. And so, you know, I've intentionally done that through a wide variety of things. Hey, this is one avenue for me. LinkedIn certainly is, but you know, with, you know, fortunately for texting, that's a great thing too. You know, send colleagues a quick note. Hey, how you doing? Happy Father's Day. I got a couple of those yesterday and sent a few of those out, things like that.
All right. Here's one, Kevin. If I'm still building my career, everybody that I have a strong relationship with that I've worked with, colleagues, I have a Google alert on them.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Every single time they're mentioned somewhere, I'm going to go and send them a quick text. Hey, glad that this happened, yeah. Or, you know, congratulations on this or whatever. It keeps you top of mind and it keeps the relationship being built.
Yeah. Excellent. Kurt, any tips from you?
I would say keeping yourself noticed, even when you do have a job, and what Neil said, it's like my baseball coach used to say it, you should be concerned when I'm not paying attention to you, you know, because I always felt like sometimes they were riding you about, you know, you didn't take enough pitches or whatever. But I think that's the key. And I think I love people when, if I have an article, like you mentioned earlier, and they'll say, nice article, it keeps me in mind and they don't need me right now, but it's nice for them to comment. But the problem is that, you know, if you sort of ignore somebody and you go into this, you know, I don't really need additional help. There's an old saying my dad used to say, but it says, you can't talk your way out of something you behaved yourself into. Because the problem is that if you get to, if you get to be noticed where you don't need any help or you're doing great and you get downsized, you've lost trust through your actions. There's no approach. There's no email PR campaign that can fix it. Then you appear desperate. So that's one thing you don't want to do. You want to have your ducks in a row, you know if something happens tomorrow or if I walk in tomorrow and I'm downsized, what do I do? Not think about that every day, but take a look every quarter and say, where am I? You know, what happens if this happens tomorrow, and be prepared and maintain the relationships with these people that can help you. Because again, it's not when you don't need them, it's when you need them. So,
hey, well, one other thing I want to add, Kevin, because, you know, we probably have children that are the same age. I think growing your mentor relationships is just so important. And when you and I and Kurt were going up, we were in office. Now you're in an office now, but so many people are virtual today. When you were in an office, mentoring was organic. A lot of you were going to lunch with people. You were doing this. Now people are virtual. They're going to have to be a lot more intentional about building those mentor relationships. I'll tell you quick story. So my son was going skiing. He was going to take my Suburban. And I said, hey, take the chains. I've got chains for the Suburban. He said, okay, I will. And I said, you want me to show you how to do it? And he said, no.
Okay.
And I said, why not? And he said, if I need to, I'll pull it up on YouTube. And that was fine.
Right.
But that's the mentality of the young people today. But here's the deal. YouTube is never going to be able to recommend you for a job.
Right. Absolutely.
The relationships, the mentor relationships will. They're never going to be able to. You might learn from it, but you can also get more from a mentor relationship than just learning.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because mentorship is one of my favorite topics. You know, before moving down here to Central Texas, I was still active here, but very active at ACHE of North Texas, was president back in 2018. And one of the things I was most proud about during my time on the board and in my executive leadership there was the development of our mentorship program. And I mean, it went from early days, hey, sign up here, we'll match you up, you know, to becoming very sophisticated. In my last year up there, I think we matched 65 pairs, and it was wonderful. And I, again, maintain those relationships. You know, coming down here, I was given the great opportunity and pleasure to oversee our administrative residence from Baylor University. And so, you know, continue to build those relationships with those young executives now, has been key. And they've, you know, so many people think from a mentor-mentee standpoint, the mentor is giving everything off. And I tell everybody, I learned so much more from my mentees then I'm sure they learn from me, because they bring a youthful energy that sometimes, hey, us old guys kind of need. But they also have great contacts too. And so, like you said, you never know. So, okay. So thanks for letting me kind of take a little bit of a rabbit trail. So let's go back to the 90-day insight series. You know, what are some of the key tactics that a new CEO can learn from these articles? Just a two or three nuggets. You know, we've already hit on some, but anything else?
Yeah. Do you mind if I go first?
Yeah. No, not at all.
So, one of the things that we talk about in the first 90 days is to be intentional and to be strategic and plan out some symbolism. Right? Some things that you're going to do symbolically. So I'll give you, this is actually an example. And I don't know how it came to me, but as I was writing this, I remembered my first job out of college. I worked for a big plumbing wholesaler, Ferguson Enterprises. You've probably bought toiletries from them. And I was in their executive training program, and they fired our CEO. So they brought in a new CEO, and there were five of us. They called us trainees, very young, aggressive, you know, young people. And our CEO showed up for the first day, and we're all looking out the window watching him. And he parks in the parking lot, And he gets out and he walks through the parking lot and he picks up trash. Okay. Never says word, comes, throws it away, then comes in, introduces himself. Hey, how's it going? Great to see you. But let me tell you something. There wasn't a single bit of trash in that parking lot ever again, because we would get here in the office before him. And what we did is we picked it up. He never said a word to us. The other one was, we were all in a bullpen and we were inside sales. So we would, you know, the phone would ring and we'd answer and take orders. One day we're all kind of jawing around, not paying attention. The phone's ringing and Grover walks out of his office, doesn't say a word, picks up the phone. Grover Martin, how can I help you? Takes the order, hands the order to us, walks on. Never says a word, right? But from then on, when that phone rang, we were jumping across the desk to make sure that we got it, to make sure that Grover never answered the phone again.
Sure.
Symbolic things that really impact the organization.
Boy, that's great. Kurt?
You know, I think a major theme of everybody we've interviewed so far has been, and I always like to harken back to John Wooden. I loved his book, but he was the coach at UCLA for all those years. But he had a quote that says, be quick, but don't hurry. And I understand in healthcare, and we all do, that urgency is a part of the job. And when you're new in the first 90 days, it's important. But I think a major theme through all the people that we interviewed was, they understood that quick leaders have a plan, you know, and they don't move too quickly. They prioritize, but also they told a story about hurried leaders that skip steps. And I think that's very important. But I think executives are under pressure to prove themselves the first 90 days. So take your time, understand what your priorities, but listen before acting. You know, I think that's one of the themes. They clarified their vision early. They said, listen, I want to learn, but here's my vision. What's your thoughts? And they showed calm if there was any chaos. There was a speech I used to do a while ago, and it was called Doctors Are From Mars, Administrators Are From Venus. Very similar to the situation you talked about, Kevin. But there was one gentleman that walked into a pretty tense situation. The prior CEO had a no confidence vote with the doctors. So instead of coming on strong, he found out what the issues were, but he just ate in the doctor's lounge every day and didn't say a word. And just finally somebody came over and said, you and this new CEO? And he said, sure. And he goes, would you mind bringing in some food next time? So he started bringing in pizza. And, you know, these are things, but he didn't come in and say, we're going to fix this right away. He waited, he watched, he saw what the problem was, and he let them come to him. But I mean, quickness shows confidence, but I think haste really, reveals insecurity. I think it's very important the first 90 days. That's one of the themes I would say runs through all these.
Boy, that's great. Yeah, I'll be honest. I spend a lot of time in the doctor's lounge. And, you know, there's not a lot of business talked in there, but there's a lot of relationships built. And I told everybody, you know, early on, I said, guys, I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm too old. I can't remember any mistruths I might share. So I don't want to do that. You know, I'll tell you the truth. Sometimes you're not going to like what I tell you, and we can work through that. But you know, I'm probably in the doctor's lounge 2 or 3 days a week, just talking with all of our docs, and most of the time it's talking about Baylor athletics. But they know me, I know them well, and so you know, if we run into any issues, we've got that commonality that we can utilize. So, a couple other things to wrap us up, guys. During your years of healthcare executive search, have you seen the job of healthcare executives change? And in today's world, what are boards looking for when they interview and hire a new executive?
So I think a couple of things that I've seen. I think the one of the big areas, you know, when we started back in the 90s, if I presented a group of candidates to a board, 7 or 8 of them were what I would call lay executives, right? MHA types that have come up through the ranks. Today, half of them are going to be physician executives. And I believe that at some point in the future, most substantive hospital organizations will be run by a physician, or there'll be a physician at the head. I expected it to be a little farther along. I don't think we prepared the physicians to be executives as well as we could have. And so I don't think that there were enough of them to completely take over, if you will. But I think eventually they will. Now, they'll always need MHA types to run the operations and do all of that. But I do think that many are going to be physician led.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'd also throw RN folks in there too. A lot more nurses as well. Just people with a clinical background.
Absolutely.
Hey, yep. I got into this in a roundabout way. I got an MBA and was in another industry for 4 years before I got into healthcare. And I got in on the business development and marketing side, if you can't tell. And so I had to learn that hospital healthcare side and then continue going through the operations side, because I always took seriously that last line in everybody's job description, other duties as assigned. I was always willing to do things that people didn't want to do. And it served me pretty well in my career. But I totally agree with you, Neil. I'm seeing, as the complexity of the healthcare system continues to grow, it really does take a clinical mindset to be able to lead large organizations, especially.
And I will tell you the other thing that this is the world as a whole, okay? But I mean, I remember the days when a hospital CEO. I was sitting in their office and their assistant came in with their emails and they would hand them their emails.
Right.
Okay. Today, I was talking to a healthcare consultant, one of the top 10 consulting mm-hmm. firms. And she said, today, every conversation ends talking about AI and its impact and how to use it best, not only clinically, but operationally inside a hospital. And you can't do that if your assistant's handing you your email. Obviously nobody does that anymore, but you have to be able to be on the technological edge. You have to understand it and know it.
Yeah, you definitely have to be tech savvy, because as you said, I just here in our hospital over the last year or so, the proliferation of AI, particularly in our imaging right now, but it's starting to leak over into everything else. But yeah, you're exactly right. Kurt, same question.
Well, I think boards are looking for fresh eyes. As I mentioned earlier, I think they are. The complexities of healthcare have grown tenfold over there. It's almost like the Richter scale, where 6 to 7 doesn't equal 7 to 8. And, you know, they're looking for fresh eyes. A couple of board members I talked to said, I really started understanding healthcare a lot better when we hired a CEO that was a physician, mainly because they understood they were going through the whole process of how do we pay our physicians on performance. You know, how do you, and Einstein said it the best. He said, a lot of things you can count don't count, and a lot of things you can't count count. He said, how do we grade healthcare? And I had a blog a couple of years ago. They were talking about, how do we rate patient satisfaction scores? Because they're always, that good patient satisfaction scores sometimes don't correlate with that patient getting better, because they like the doctor. The doctor says, okay, you don't have to lose 20 pounds, whatever. But I wrote this blog. It was called, I Can't Get No Patient Satisfaction. And it kind of went around the nation, but the one doctor that called me on it was one person that this board member was talking about. And she said, we really defined how do we take patient satisfaction and incorporate it in all this pay for performance, as we were supposed to do, from going from fee for service to pay for performance. So I think fresh eyes, doctors have that. And just to add additionally on to what Neil said, our doctors are really in tune with AI, because it's starting to be used in charts and things like that. And they can really help, I think, all the people on their team, not just themselves. And I'm talking down the line, CNO, CMO, COO. So,
Yeah, you're talking about fresh eyes. And of course, first thing I think of is one of my favorite quotes, fresh eyes, clear hearts can't lose. There you go. Yeah. So, gentlemen, this has been a great pleasure. I really enjoyed our time together. Lastly, how does my audience learn more about Health Search Partners and in your 90-day series?
Awesome. Super. I'm going to go first and then I'll let Kurt. But if anybody wants to contact us, whether they want to talk about the 90-day series or whether they want us to help them attract somebody for their team, they can reach us at healthsearchpartners.com or reach out on LinkedIn. And would love to hear if somebody has a great 90-day tactic that they've used, something earth-shattering, the second door of the minivan. I mean, something really, really strong. I'd love to hear it. And maybe we can make you the next chapter in our series.
Well, just in closing, I think we developed the 90-day leadership articles to highlight all these strategies that CEOs use in their first pivotal 90 days, if I can say that. And the early phase is often the make or break window. And a lot of people say, well, I have time. I have 6 months, 12 months. Well, you don't. I mean, you really start before you get there. And it's crucial, I guess, for setting the tone, establishing trust with your new employees, and also generating early momentum, early wins, if you will. So I think in closing, it's more than this first 90 days series. It's more than just a transition. It's sort of a foundation for long-term success. And that's why we did it.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. It's been, as I said, a distinct pleasure. Neil Marshall, Chairman, Co-Founder, Kurt Mosley, Associational Practice Leader for Health Search Partners. Thank you for joining me today on I Don't Care. And I look forward to staying connected with each of you and would love to have you back on again. It's rare that I get two such experienced folks on one show, and it's been a lot of fun doing it. So again, gentlemen, thank you so much.
It's great
Thanks,
to be
Kevin.
Here.
We really enjoyed it.
Great. Thank you. Well, so that's a wrap for today's episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll see you next time. Take care.